You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a monthly program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, we have the privilege of talking to Michael Mead. He is a mythologist. He is a renowned storyteller and author. He is somebody who combines hypnotic storytelling with a perception of what's going on in our world today. And boy, do we need that this month and this year. So that's why I'm really, really pleased to be able to talk to him today. And also, you will have the opportunity to see him yourself. He is going to be coming to Port Townsend on December 3rd, that Saturday, at 7 p.m. He will be at Quimper Unitarian Fellowship on San Juan Avenue, and he will be speaking about how our world is churning and that it needs your genius. And that is definitely true. Welcome today, Michael.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Good to talk with you.
It is certainly good to talk to you. I'd like you to begin today by just reading a little bit from part of the introduction of your book, The Genius Myth. And we'll be talking a lot more about that book later on in the program. But that'll help set the stage for what you're all about.
All right. There's a little section called A Mythological Antidote. In the midst of the fragmentation that now characterizes our world, each person winds up pushed to some extreme. Since the center cannot hold, it must be located at another level of being. Each person must find a thread of relevance to their own soul. That soul thread connects to the eternal thread that runs through all of life. If enough people carry an essential thread, then the new center can become woven of the diverse skein of threads carried by individual souls. The antidote for the isolation and dissociation so characteristic of modern life lies in finding again the ancient wellsprings of human imagination and the personal thread that is tied to the underlying continuity of the world. For there is a myth at the heart of things, and a hidden wholeness underlies the world. An endless story unfolds from the core of creation, and a living thread of imagination is woven within the heart of each person, connecting us to that center. Secretly, we are tied by a delicate yet indelible thread to the very heart of things. Apocalyptic myths often include what's called an apostasis, or a renewal of the cosmos after a period of chaos and dissolution. Apocalypse does not mean the end of everything. Rather, it means a lifting of the veil, a time of both collapse and renewal, as the underlying energies of life become intensely activated and revealed. In mythic terms, it is not simply that collapse is followed by renewal, rather that the two go on simultaneously. As things fall apart on one level, the next world seeks to arise from another level. This can be considered a new world, or the same old world renewing itself from its eternal origins. In the mythic sense, the new world is also the ancient world that has renewed itself time and time again. So the problem is, soon it will all come to an end. Rather, the issue is how to act when it all seems to be ending. And I'll stop there. It goes on.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to do is say that we are standing at this point of collapse and renewal. And the collapse becomes evident in what's happening with all the institutions of it, of culture. And the collapse includes an intense polarization that turns people against each other and makes everything seem opposed. But at the same time, at the level, there is a process of renewal occurring. And that process really begins in the depth of the individual heart and soul. And what I'm using in the book, The Genius Myth, is the old Western idea of genius as the spirit of innovation, creation, and imagination hidden inside the soul of each person.
Well, let's face it, after the election, we do feel like we're in, everything's ripping apart. There are millions of people that are full of despair and despondency. And so I think what the things that you write about, talk about that we move through the wasteland, we may feel like we're in the apocalypse, but there is going to be a renewal. So what kind of way can we tap into the genius that's within ourselves to help both ourselves and our communities and our country? Big questions.
Yeah. So one of the polarized philosophies in the world is mostly in the modern world, people think that you're born empty and then your experience becomes who you are. But in the ancient world, in the mythological world, in the world of stories, the idea is that everybody enters the world with something seated within them, that each person is unique at their essence, and that each person has come to the world bearing gifts that are intended to be given. So I wrote the book specifically to get across the idea that everyone born is already valuable. Everybody has self-worth because everybody is carrying a gift to give. And that's true of every child born, girl or boy, rich or poor, white, black, or any other, that it is the human nature to be gifted and to be, and genius is the old word for that indelible gift inside a person. And that now, when nature is threatened and culture seems to be unraveling, is the time for each person to find and live out their genius. And then in the book, I talk about the old idea of vocation or calling. It's one thing to have a career. It's another thing to be called to do something completely meaningful with one's life. And it turns out that some people have a genius for how to do natural farming or how to help the rivers and the trees and the forests heal, because both nature and culture are wounded at this time. And other people have an instinct for how to do hospice work. They have a genius for how to bring people together and that kind of thing. And so when a person finds this thread of their genius, they then have a path to go on, but then they also have a way of helping to heal and bring things back together. The word heal really means to make whole.
I think in this community in Port Townsend, we are blessed with so many ways that we can reach out and heal, both in the natural world and with people in that live in our communities. So I feel like we're on the right path here. Talking about path, I'd like to turn this back to you and find out a little bit about you discovering your own path and your own genius. I know that you are part of the Mosaic Multicultural Foundation that is located in Seattle, and you speak all over the country. How did you find your way to where you are today?
Well, it's interesting. The defining thing happened to me on my 13th birthday, when growing up poor, I had learned not to ask for anything. But my aunt asked me what I was interested in, and I said history. At the time, I was trying to understand history. And she went off to a bookstore. She was a very short person, and asked where were the history books, and they pointed to an upper shelf. And she went over and reached up and grabbed the book. They wrapped it. She gave it to me that evening for my birthday. I started to take the paper off the cover, and she said, "Oh, it's the wrong book. Give it back. I got the wrong book." And I'm looking at this beautiful picture of a flying horse going across the cover of the book. And I'm going, "No, I want this book." And she's saying, "It's the wrong book." And I said, "But I want it." And then I tore the rest of the paper off, and it said Mythology by Edith Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And that night, I found my language. I found my connection, you could say, to the genius thread. I found the world of myth, which explains a lot more than history does. And I found the languages that I was intended to live with. Now, truly, it took me 20 years to learn how to live with that. But there it was, the kind of cracking of the seed of what my soul was about. And so not everybody has a story exactly like that, but everybody has this kind of seed of a genius life, and everybody has some touch of it. The problem is the world no longer understands how to nourish and feed that spirit in each child. And so most people grow up with only a vague, if any, relationship to their own genius, and people live their whole lives doing work that is not the work of their soul.
Mm-hmm. I began, of course, to think about my own awakening, that time, that adolescent time when you're in, you know, kind of the halfway world and you're not sure who you are or what you want to be or should be. I think that this is a very important part of your book, but I also think that the book speaks to anyone on any stage of life to look back to that flame that first inspired you. Inspired a person. So I'd like you to talk about the work of being an elder and also your work with some of the, what we call now at-risk youth. But the at-risk youth are all of our youth, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the world we live in now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is at risk, and young people are doubly at risk because their job is to find themselves. And very hard to find yourself when you're young, but much harder to find yourself when your culture no longer knows where it is or where it should be going. So the weight comes heavy on to youth. But in the book, I write about what I call the acceleration of calling. And it's a strange thing. But when the basic systems aren't working and when everything seems to be falling apart, calling accelerates. It's as if when normal doesn't work, the kind of mythical works better. And so there is more access to the calling right now. Calling is calling to the genius in a person. That's what the calling is all about. The person already has the genius quality. The calling is trying to awaken it. And in the book, what I say is, it's so important that a person awaken to the purpose and direction of their life that the calling keeps calling. So now you have, with people living longer and longer, you have a very large group of what I call the olders, mm-hmm. because they're all older, and they're getting older and staying older, but not necessarily growing wiser. And there's a difference between the old and the elder. And one difference is that the elder has actually found out what their life is about, and they have found out something about what they are intended to give. The other thing about elders are not the people who have never fallen. They're the people who have fallen down and figured out how to get up. And therefore, when everything around us is falling down, we don't need more ideological politicians. We need more elders. And elders instinctively know that you have to reach out to young people, and there is a secret conversation between the elders and the youth that is missing in modern culture, but it was the root of imagination in ancient cultures.
You also speak in your book about a time of great change and moving back and forth across the wasteland before we find an opportunity to burst through. You call that the Kairos moment. Is this such a time and such a moment?
We are in it, deeply in it. You know, the wasteland includes the loss of imagination. So culture, the job of culture, one job of culture, is to generate vertical imagination. What pulls people together is height and depth, not kind of horizontal spread. With the internet, everybody's interconnected, but it's horizontal. Community is made from vertical imagination, from high ideals and deep emotions that pull people together. And so when you don't have that vertical imagination and depth of soul in the middle, you have a wasteland where everything seems can become despairing in a moment. A person nowadays can fall into despair in a minute. Of course, after the election, many people fell into despair. And the victory, if there was a victory, is kind of false in a sense because the culture remains divided. Popular vote goes one way, electoral college goes another, red states go one, blue goes another. Everything is opposed, and it's kind of a wasteland, a spiritual wasteland, and an emotional disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to find our way back to common ground, but we have to find our way there using uncommon means. And I'm using this notion of a genius in everybody that knows why each of us are here. And if we can encourage this creative genius part of ourselves, we can begin to reweave, and in many ways, a kind of localized community like Port Townsend has a great advantage because people can be closer to the land, and the land is a unifying force, and people may be able to sort things out a little better because they live closer together, and there's the possibility of community. And I'm going to repeat the idea that community is a dynamic connection happening between the young and the old. It includes families and the dynamic of family, but it includes this great imagination that somehow transmits between young people trying to find the vision of their life and elders holding on to the dream that was at the center of their life to begin with.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. This is Book Lovers Cafe. I'm Chris Wilson, and we are talking today to author and mythologist and storyteller Michael Mead. His latest book is called The Genius Myth. It is not a myth that you don't have the genius within you. I'd like to say that right up front. Michael, you relate many stories in your book that are very moving and help us understand why mythology from many cultures can have answers and can help us understand what's going on today. Would you like to just tell us one of those stories? I love to hear you tell stories, and I know our audience does too. Perhaps, well, I'll let you choose.
Well, because I was talking about youth and elders, in the book I tell the story of what's called a half boy. Mm-hmm. It could be a half girl. What it represents is a young person who feels torn in half or feels like only half of them is being seen. In other words, especially in a culture like our culture, that has lost the real kind of depth of imagination that is the true inheritance of the human soul. People are judged by what they look like, how they appear. And that's maybe even less than half of who they are. And so it's a story about how this half boy or this boy who is only seen as half of himself has to leave the village and go looking for a life that's a greater life. And he winds up encountering another half, like the other half of himself. And then rather than the two just coming together and living happily ever after, the two enter into a conflict, which is really what happens inside of the heart of a person, is there's a battle in there between the kind of two different views of oneself. At any rate, they begin the battle so hard that they fall into a river, and that causes the river to boil, and they disappear. And then after a time, the river boils again, and out comes the half-boy now made whole. And in this story, it doesn't show how the unification happens because it happens down in the depths. And what happens in the human soul, which is really the place where history is made, happens without anybody seeing it. Even in therapy, it's hard to see what happens. You feel the effect of it, but you can't actually see it. And this falling into the river is a reference to the old idea of baptism, which wasn't something that happened simply to an infant when it was born. Whole villages used to go down to the river and enter the water and go through a baptism again every time they became conflicted and opposed with each other. Baptism is the old idea of water being the unifying, reconciling force, and baptism is the ritual of bringing things back together. And so this half-boy has to go deep into the waters of the psyche and into the turbulence of the soul in order to find unity. But when he comes out, he's disoriented, but he's now an agent of meaningful change, and he's stumbling around, and he sees a village, and he stumbles towards the village, and sitting at the edge of the village is what looks like an elder. because the elders are often on the edge mm-hmm. because they know that change and meaning is found at the edge of life. At any rate, the elder says to him, come this way. And he says, well, I don't know where I am or where I've arrived at. And the elder says, you're back at the place where you began. You're back at where you started from. And since you've been gone, there's been no dancing in the village. But if you and I, you being young and I being old, and each of us being a half of this story of being human, if the two of us enter the village dancing, then the whole village will dance again. And so they go in dancing into the village, and sure enough, everybody comes out and dances, and they find the joy of life, the song of creation, the dance of unity all together, the young and the old being the two kind of parallel agents of real change, the young bringing the dream of the future and the old bringing the wisdom of experience. And so it's a story that talks about the hidden genius being found in the depth of the soul, and then the youth and the genius of the elders being the two elements that can bring everybody back together. And in this culture at this point, we do elect quite old people. I think the mm-hmm. president-elect might be the oldest one ever put yes. in that position.
Yes, he is.
But being old is not being elder. And as they say in Africa, white hair doesn't make the elder. What makes the elder is an awakening to the knowledge in their own soul and a realization of the meaning of life and how the meaning of life is connected to the love of life and gratitude for the gift that the elders didn't become wise enough to vote for care. One of the disheartening things about redoing the election is I think it's people 44 years of age and older who really swayed the election in the direction it has gone. And without getting into politics, what I see is people getting older without getting wiser. The older people are supposed to be the ones cherishing, protecting, and caring for the greatest ideals. And also acting sacrificially to make the future world better for young people. And I don't mean this economic ideological battle. I mean the things that really count. Recognizing that everybody is human in their soul, that everybody has a right to be alive, that the color of a person's skins or the orientation of their sexuality or any of those kind of things, their status or their economic condition, are not the things on which you judge a person, especially not a young person. And there's some kind of a failure of imagination and really a lack of courage when older people vote out of anger or resentment. It shows me that perhaps they didn't find the meaning and value of their own life, and therefore they don't know how to vote for a genuine, caring future, and they have lost some of the battle in their own heart. Mm-hmm. I may be overstating that, but that's where I wind up looking at the election.
That's right. And so at the point of breaking and the point of feeling like, you know, no one has an answer and everyone is fearful, then we have to turn to that humanity within us all. I have hope that we will. You've talked in the past and currently about the importance of ritual. One of the rituals that struck me is that the fact that we do have rituals in our Western culture, but we don't understand the meanings of them. We go through the paces. For example, lighting the candles on the birthday cake. Can you talk about the light for a moment?
It's a fascinating thing, you know. I still, like I was as a kid, I research history. But I'm always looking for mystery, not facts. Mm-hmm. And so interesting thing occurs in the origin of the birthday candle. In ancient Rome and parts of Italy, a candle would be lit, one candle, no matter how old the person was, on the day of their birthday, as a remembrance of the spirit that came into the world like a flame hidden in their heart. So one candle for that unified flame in the heart. And the idea was the candle represented literally the genius of the person. And on their birthday, the gifts would be given to the genius, not to the person. It wouldn't be about the person as their kind of social self or something, it would be a recognition that they brought a flame of genius to the world. And so I love that idea. Mm-hmm. And so that gives you a mythical version of a social idea. And that's what myth does. Myth expands and deepens things that we see all around ourselves. And that was an ancient way of reminding everyone that each person had this flame inside them. And the flame grows, as I can tell, in two ways. When I recognize that there is this genius quality in myself, I didn't do anything to get it. It kind of brought me to the world, maybe. It grows. When I see it in myself, it grows. And the other way it grows is when someone sees it in me and acknowledges it, and that used to be called a blessing. Mm-hmm. And back to the elders and the youth, one of the jobs of the elders is to bless the genius in the youth when they see it. And the practice of doing that was called mentoring, bringing the wisdom of the elders and the capacity to bless to the struggles of the youth through whom the future is trying to be born.
Thank you so much, Michael. For all of you out there, go stop by the boiler room, go to the recyclery and help a young person learn how to ride a bike. Just talk to them. Just listen to them. If you want to know more, you can go to the website and you can just look it up under Michael Mead or Mosaic Voices. If you want to see Michael, you can find him at many Unitarian churches and other venues giving talks and telling stories. For the solstice, he will be in Seattle December 20th. The program is called In This Darkness Singing at All Pilgrims Church, an evening of songs, poetry, and ritual. Go out there and sing. Go out there and dance. I will be doing all of those things during this season. And join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. I'd like to thank Larry Stein, Mike Schlexer, Jacob, all the volunteers and supporters that make this wonderful radio station possible. If you're listening on Wednesday, stay tuned for Blues Journey with Taylor Clark. If you're listening on Saturday, stay tuned for Music to My Ears with Delana. She will raise your spirits. Thank you again, Michael, for being here, and I look forward to seeing you in person.